is space, and this is time. And so here we have, I have a few points. And so now if I want to understand the position of that red interface that we saw in the simulation, it's known as the height function of the model. The way to do it from the nucleation events is the following. One imagines that out of each nucleation event, two rays start out, going to the right and up like this. And so these rays in space-time, they correspond to the two walls of the island moving left and right with constant speed. So this is sort of the light cone generated by that nucleation event, right? The expansion of the two walls. And then, when two walls meet, like here, for example. So when two rays intersect, that corresponds to the two walls meeting or two islands merging. And so they just annihilate each other. They disappear. And then the picture will look like this for the five nucleation events that I drew. And then if I want to measure the height function or the position of my interface at some point in space-time, so here I take a point, xt, and then I want to know the height function. So the height function at this point, then what I have to do is I have to count the number of these broken interfaces between the origin and the point that I'm observing at. And so this height in this case is going to be equal to 2. So this is nothing but the reformulation of my simulation so far. But now I'll do a little more. I will number my nucleation events. So I will number them by ordering in one of the coordinates. So I'll take, I'll take the usual XY coordinates of the quadrant. And so if I number my points 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, then if I look at the Y coordinate, I will observe a different order, right? So there will be, the first will be the point 4, and then the next one will be 2, and then 1, and then this one will be 5, and 3 will be the last one. So if I read now bottom to top these coordinates, I get 4, 2, 1, 5, 3, which is a permutation of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then it's natural to ask, does this height mean anything in terms of this permutation? And the answer is actually pretty neat. One needs to look at the increasing subsequences in this permutation. So for example, 2, 5 is an increasing subsequence over here. And so if I look at the corresponding points in my picture, so this is 2 and this is 5, then one can see that there is actually a path that goes in upright direction that goes through these two points and ends up at my location where I observe the height. So the conclusion actually is that the height is equal to the length of the longest increasing subsequence of my random permutation of the permutation. So if my points are random and distributed according to the Poisson process, once I condition on the number of points that I observe, for example, 5 like here, then the distribution on permutations that's getting induced is just the uniform distribution. So if I look at uniformly random permutation and I look at its length of the longest increasing subsequence, that will produce the same answer as my original model of polynuclear growth. This is a pretty nice connection that also shows why these types of problems were and are still in of interest in combinatorics. So now, hopefully, the polynuclear growth is clear. Now, what does deformed mean? So the word deformed comes from the following thing. So before, what happened is that whenever in my interface I had two walls that were moving towards each other and they met, then this gap just disappeared. The walls just merged. So in the deformed situation, there will be an additional choice of what happens. And so the choice is that it could still happen. I mean, they could still just merge and nothing happens there. So we just get an interface without any bumps there. And so this will happen with some probability. So this will happen with probability. I'll use a parameter between 0 and 1. And so this will happen with probability t. And then with the complementary probability, what will happen is that once these two walls merge, there is a new island that shows up on top. So this merging event becomes a new nucleation event for the model itself. So this will change the growth of the interface a little bit. And all these events are going to be independent. There is the additional randomness parameterized by this t. And again, the question of interest is the same. What does the interface do at large time? Now, so the undeformed case corresponds to t being 1. And so we just observe the top event. And now if we think about the case t equals 0, so the other extreme case, so this corresponds to this bottom picture showing up all the time. Now, what this means is that whenever my rays in the picture meet, they never annihilate. They just keep going straight again. And so this removes any interaction between nucleation events whatsoever. And so if we count the height function in this case, when the rays don't talk to each other, they just go through each other, then what we will be counting is just the number of points in the rectangle between the origin and the observation point. And so that in the Poisson process, that number of points is Poisson distributed. And so at large time, Poisson distribution follows central limit theorem. And so the height function will just be asymptotically normal just by the classical central limit theorem. Now, of course, it's not the interesting case for us. The interesting case is either t equal to 1, the undeformed one. So that goes back actually to, so the complete solution to that problem goes back more than 20 years. I'll say exactly where, and the t being exactly between 0 and 1. So that's actually the other thing that will be interesting to us is some sort of a transition regime between this t equal to 1 case and the non-interesting Gaussian case t equal to 0. But I'll get there. So. Okay, so I spend a lot of time on defining the models. Let me state the results that I wanted to talk about. Let me say that this is a joint work with two friends, Amol Agarwal and Michael Wheeler. So this is in our joint paper that is available on the archive. So I'll state two theorems. So theorem one says the following, that for a fixed t between not including 0, the Gaussian case, but including 1, the original case, if I take the limit, so I'll put here tau squared minus x squared goes to infinity. So this condition just means that we are where the interface is growing. That's all. It doesn't mean anything else, that we are in the cone where the growth is happening. And then I compute the probability that the height function, so I'll put here t to indicate that the whole model depends on t. Actually, I'll add the assumption. So I'll assume that's just for convenience of normalization, that the intensity of the Poisson process in the quadrant, of the Poisson process, is one minus t. This is, I mean, I could keep it one. It will just change the constants that participate in the statement. It's convenient to have it normalized a little bit differently. Okay, so I take my height function at the point x tau. Then I need to subtract an appropriate quantity, which ends up being this. And then that's the law of large numbers behavior. And then once I divide by the law of large numbers to the power 1/3. So there is 1/6 sitting here, sort of a unusual exponent for classical probability. Then this limit exists. And this limit is the Tracy-Witten distribution. So this is something known as the Tracy-Witten distribution. It's not a normal, very normal distribution, not a Gaussian. Tracy-Witten distribution first appeared in random matrices back in 1993. It governs the behavior of the largest eigenvalue of Gaussian Hermitian random matrices. I don't want to write a formula for this distribution. I don't think it will say much. I can roughly plot it. It sort of reminds a Gaussian a little bit, but it's slightly shifted, and its tails actually are not symmetric, and they're also not of Gaussian type. And the key role that it plays, that it actually is a universal distribution for many growth processes. So it's supposed to be the universal limit of one-point distributions in the so-called KPZ universality class. But I don't want to go there. Suffice it to say that we see that here, independently of our parameter t, our growth models have the same fluctuation behavior. So there is a little bit of a universality happening here as well. Now, I'll say that when t is equal to 1, so this is the undeformed case, then this statement goes back to the work by Bike, Daft, and Johansson, sort of a famous paper that was literally addressing the question of the asymptotics of the longest increasing subsequences. And so that's more than 20 years old. Okay, now that's the first statement. It may not be too surprising given the fact that Tracy-Witten distribution is really supposed to be the universal object. Now I'll also state the second theorem. So the second theorem addresses the question of how to go from the Tracy-Witten distribution to the normal distribution that shows up in t equals zero situation, right? So how to pass from this, non-trivial statement related to random matrices and things like that to the classical central limit theorem. So that transition should happen when t approaches zero. Right. And for some reason I have I might have confused key. Right, sorry. I mean, I got T and 1 minus T flipped. So let me run it backwards. So this is going to be 1 minus T. This is going to be T. And so when T is 1, this is what's going on. And when T is 0, this is what is going on. And so here instead, I will have strict inequality in the wrong place. So t equals 0 is the undeformed case. Sorry about that. Now, when I want to see the transition, what I will want to see is t getting close to 1. So I'm trying to sort of make this in strict inequality here, almost inequality. And so what I'll do is that I will take t approaching 1. Using a small parameter epsilon. And then the statement looks like this. So then the limiting statement looks like this. If I take the limit, actually I will not write the limit like this, I'll write it slightly differently. So I'll take my height function h. I want to evaluate it somewhere far in the quadrant, so I scale I'll scale the position of x and the position of tau. And I subtract the law of large numbers, which is exactly the same as it was before. And I'm going to multiply this by epsilon. So the scaling that leads to the limiting theorem is slightly different. Then there is even a logarithmic correction that shows up. And so this converges in distribution when epsilon goes to 0 to a smooth random variable. Now I'll write it in a funny form for now. So I'll, the letter capital T is just tau squared minus x squared. And then minus, so I'll put here curly h t evaluated at 0. So these symbols so far don't mean anything. This is just some random variable. This is some random variable. And so the reason that I write this random variable in such a form is because this curly h is a solution of what's known as the KPZ or Cardar-Poisson equation. So let me rather not write it, but say that if I exponentiate this h denoted by z, then the z function will solve a much nicer equation. So this is a linear stochastic PDE. So the derivative in T is equal to the Laplacian, or just the second derivative in this case, a T of X plus z t of x multiplied by the white noise. So this w dot here, this is the space-time white noise. And this whole PD, this object here, has a name. And this is called the stochastic heat equation. With multiplicative noise. So this statement looks probably quite complicated. And if you've never seen this before, then at least to me, this would have looked scary. You know, the exponents are difficult. And then there is this logarithmic correction that shows up that's not even algebraic.